We hear you. We got you. Step into a world of endless possibilities with Imagine's expanded software support. Now you can utilize your folders of photos to create a profile or edit. Post-production is easier than ever. Whether you're using Lightroom, Photoshop, or Bridge, Imagine seamlessly integrates with your workflow. Open the Imagine app today and try starting from a folder instead of Lightroom Classic.
I could do it. I wanted to do it. And when I drove home afterwards, I felt like so strangely happy and warm. And I think it's then that I saw that I didn't capture this grief.
Workflows is a podcast about saving you time and money in your photography business. As a photographer and content creator who struggles with dyslexia, color blindness, introversion, and anxiety stemming from years of being bullied as a child, workflows have been my rock. I have workflows for every aspect of my life, and that's why I'm so happy to bring you Workflows, a podcast presented by Imagine. As a company dedicated to saving you time and money in your photography business, it makes sense to enhance and expand the conversation to all things workflows. Tune in and subscribe to hear stories, strategies, and tools that could be your rock. Hear from people just like you. Put the camera down for a little, connect the headphones, and get to work with Workflows. Get in on the conversation by joining the Imagine community today. Imagine the possibilities. Jacqueline Duchamp is a photographer from Amsterdam, known for her candid, documentary approach. Her expressive photography is about capturing special moments, interactions, and emotions between people. Since her mom died in 2015, she has been passionate about end-of-life and farewell photography. No one forgets to have pictures taken at their wedding. Her mission is that people won't forget photography in hard times either. She is committed to capturing reality and has an eye for spontaneous, once-in-a-lifetime moments that feel honest. Her images are intimate and sometimes funny, always telling a true story. All photos are made in relaxed, sympathetic, and unobtrusive ways. Jacqueline has received several awards, such as Fearless, WPGA, PANL, and PX3. And has been honored to participate in the jury of several prestigious photography contests. She is also the owner of the Full Monty Workshop, an intensive year-long training for photographers who want to take a more documentary and storytelling approach. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Jacqueline. Hello, Jacqueline.
Hi, Scott.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Good, good. I'm very excited about this conversation. So this is a very different episode than what we normally do for the show. And I'm very excited that you're the first person to have one of these special episodes that I don't even have a name for it yet, but it will have a name before it goes live. So I'm going to get right into it. My first question to you is, what inspired you to pursue end-of-life photography?
Yeah, that was really personal. My mom died in 2016 and she got ill in 2015, and it started with a seizure. And she had a lot of friends who kept on calling me to ask how she was doing. And I didn't have time for that. I had a family, I had my work, I had my mom and dad. I had to go to the hospital with them. And so I started making a blog, you know, and everything that I thought was interesting for everybody to know, I just put in a blog, made some pictures, and so that saved me a lot of time. And in the week after her funeral, a friend of mine, a wedding photographer, he asked if I could document the burial of his father. And before that, I did think about documenting funerals, but it felt really weird, you know. I didn't understand why I would want to capture the grief of something like that. And so I never followed up on that. And then he asked it, and sure, I wanted to do it. And then after the funeral, when I drove home, you know, and it was the same week, the week after the cremation of my mom, I drove home and I felt very strangely like at peace and warm and happy. And I realized that I didn't capture the grief, but the more the good moments and the love and remembering all the beautiful stories about the one about his dad. And so yeah. That was the first moment that I realized what it could mean. And then about 6 months later, I saw the blog post, the blog again that I made for the friends of my mom. And that was really weird because I realized that I completely forgot all the good moments that we had. You know, it was really special to realize that all the memories were gone. And I got them back because I was watching the pictures and reading the stories I made. So that was really special. And for me, that was a realization of how important it can be to capture hard times.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that going from being a wedding photographer to now this giant switch, which is like the complete opposite end of this, of the emotion spectrum for your clients, you know, I'm sure that you know, hits you pretty hard. And we're gonna dive into how you handle this kind of thing and all that comes with it. So my next question then is, what do you hope that your clients take away from your images that you're providing to them?
Well, it's the same as my own experience. Is I hope they remember the good moments they had. That's one thing. I know that some people feel strengthened by looking at these pictures. And when it's for a funeral, it might be a second chance to relive the day of the funeral. And that sounds really weird. Why would you want to remember the day of the funeral? But that's also can be very comforting. You know, it's for here in the Netherlands, it's usually about a week after somebody dies that there's a funeral. And there's a lot of things to arrange, and people are really tired after this week. And, you know, you don't remember all the people that were there, and you can see all the things that are happening. You know, it's just like, it's just you, and there's so many people. And it can be really helpful to look at pictures and feel the love again, and the support you get. It's also the celebrating of the life somebody had. That's really can really help. Well, it helps coping with the loss of a loved one. You know, it's and also I think one of the things that can really help is if you have like a small album, a small or a big one, but mm-hmm. So if somebody has a small album, you can take it with you, and it makes it so much easier to talk about a funeral or somebody that passed away. But it makes it so much easier to talk about somebody who died and about a funeral.
So when you think about wedding photography, quite often you're, as a photographer, you're getting some photos from the distance, and then you're sometimes getting in there while everybody's dancing and you're up close. And you try to be a part of the event, but also not distract from the bride and groom's big day and things like that. So much is involved. But when it comes to funeral photography, end of life photography, these, which are, like I said earlier, like the complete opposite end of the emotion spectrum, how do you capture such honest moments in a way where you're comfortable and the people are comfortable and you're still getting fantastic photos that tell that story? How do you do that in such an honest way?
Well, I'm not really sure. It's completely the opposite spectrum of emotions, because on a wedding, there's very often sad moments because people are missing. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's a lot of thinking of good memories and laughter at a funeral. But for me, it's very important to connect with people before, if possible, you know, to if possible, get to know a little bit more about the family and the one that's passed away. So it makes it easier to capture pictures that have more meaning. And it sometimes can be hard. You know, sometimes I get booked by the family directly, and sometimes by a funeral director. Mm-hmm. And those are sometimes can be very protective, and I do understand why. But it's not. I don't agree with them. They think sometimes it's too much for the family to also talk with a photographer about the photography. And that can be true, but I think the family should decide it themselves. And my experience is that most of the time they really love talking about the one who passed away, you know, so, and the story and what they mean to them and what they're going to do at the funeral. So, yeah, so that can be a problem if the director protects the family. But yeah, so for me, it's getting to know them. That's the main thing.
Yeah. And when you're photographing these type of, you know, funerals, for example, or if you're in somebody's house photographing an end of life situation, what's your equipment like? Like, what are you using? I know this is like the more nerdy part of photography, but it's so interesting for somebody who's never considered doing this type of thing. It's so interesting to think like, how would you handle it? Is the equipment going to be different? So can you talk a little bit about what you bring with you, what you're using on a regular basis?
Yeah, sure. I don't use flash. That's one thing. And I have a camera, a mirrorless camera that is completely silent. So for me, that's the reason that I changed cameras when I started doing this photography. And then I use 24-70 and 135 low light lenses, if that's the word for it. Mm-hmm. So I want to be able to make good quality pictures in low light situations. And I think I don't really work in a different way than I would at a wedding. So I have a journalistic approach, I think, to moments and interactions that I capture.
I mentioned, or I was alluding to this earlier, the fact that I wanted to dive a little bit into the impact it might play on you. So I wonder, how do you handle the emotional impact that these type of things could put on you? Things that you're witnessing at a, you know, in these events regularly. I know that you keep saying it's not too similar to weddings, or it's similar to weddings in many aspects. To me, it doesn't feel that way. To me, I don't think I could handle it. But so I'm wondering how you handle it.
Yeah, no, sure, it is different. It is different, but my approach is not different. And because the strange thing is that I don't handle funerals very well. You know, if I attend a funeral, that I'm usually crying a lot. And so it's not that I can switch off my emotions. So also at a funeral, I do cry, usually when everybody's crying. And so nobody will notice because, you know, there's something happening. Nobody's paying attention to me. But part of it is, I want to make good quality pictures. So I'm looking at the framing and my aperture and the shutter speed. And I think that's, you know, the camera is between me and the emotion. So that helps. Yeah. And I think it's also helped that I know the value of what I'm doing. So yeah, this might be also be a filter, you know, it is different, yeah. but yeah.
I could definitely see the camera and the lens, you know, being in front of your face for a lot of those, you know, jobs, and the fact that it is a job, being a good blocker to, if you were there as a guest, if you were there as somebody grieving, that would be much, much more difficult.
Yeah. Well, sure. I think if it wouldn't touch me emotionally anymore, then I would quit, stop doing it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and that goes with anything. Like, if you're not feeling it, like something, some sort of emotion from it, then that's.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Because end of life photography is often during these dark days and funerals, during dark days for families. Can you describe your editing style? And Imagine does editing, so we've got to talk about editing a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
Can you describe your editing style and like your methodology for it for these jobs, for these sessions? Because I think the first gut reaction that people would have is, oh, it's a funeral. These are going to be black and white, and they're going to be nice deep blacks and vibrant bright whites, the super high contrast, or this dark and moody color style. So talk about what you do for your edits.
Well, I don't do black and white never. But no, I like color. And, you know, my picture will be clean, natural, colorful. Maybe on the warm side. If there's like a, it's not a filter, but you know, I like the warm feeling for the funeral photo, the end of life photography. Yeah, so that's my editing style.
Awesome. And at the end of the show, we'll ask you to share your website and we'll definitely link it in the show notes. Everybody will be able to go and look at, you know, the way that you photograph these events and the way that you edit them with Imagine. So earlier you mentioned one of the challenges that you face, which is sometimes the fact that it's the families that are hiring you and not like the funeral directors and planners that are hiring you. And that could be challenging. So can you go into some of the challenges, either digging in deeper into that or a different challenge, whatever you want, faced with end of life funerals and these?
I think one of the things that is a challenge for me is that there's still a taboo on end of life photography. People that know about it find it hard to suggest it to others. And I think it's because they are afraid that somebody thinks it's a strange question, where I think it might also be the case that people because I hear a lot people feeling sad that they didn't know about this photography, and if they had known, they would have pictures now. And so the whole idea of not asking them because it might be a weird question, it has two sides, you know. So that's one of the challenges that I'm facing, you know, like practical, you can't use flash. That's a challenge sometimes. It's people in a funeral, you know, the family is the one that hires me. But there's a lot of other people with a lot of grief and crying, and they didn't ask for me, you know, so that's also a challenge sometimes. And I think that's usually when the funeral director tells the guests, like, there's a photographer and because family asks for it and to document for their own use, and it's usually no problem. And
yeah,
then
I was going to say, yeah. How often do you, when like a funeral planner, or funeral director announce that to everybody that, you know, the family hired a photographer, how often do you see somebody say, no, I don't want to be photographed and leave, or
hardly ever.
That's good.
Sometimes, you know, yeah. Sometimes when they pay the last respects, or they walk at, and I don't know if that's like a cultural thing, but you know, you walk past the coffin and then you can pay your respects. sometimes I see somebody holding up the hand, you know, for like, no, but that's okay. Right. You know, then I don't make a picture, but no, that's it.
Yeah. I think it's important that if anybody's going to get into this, from my point of view, to respect somebody's privacy, where if they are a guest there and they are grieving and they put up their hand or whatever, don't like force the photo. Just respect it and wait for the next person.
Yeah. And it's also, I'm not there to capture all the guests. Right. You know, that's not what I'm doing. Right. I'm finding the interactions and the story of the day itself. So yeah, sure. If somebody doesn't want to be in the pictures, then I won't. Then I'll stop photographing them.
Yeah. So what would you say if you had 1 minute to recommend to a photographer to get into this niche?
Well, I'd start with saying just don't do it for the money. I think you have to really have your heart in it and start with getting familiar on what happens on a funeral. You know, I think I'd start with getting in touch with funeral directors and see if you can document their day. So you will have some pictures. Of course, you would have to be able to use some of them to get some kind of portfolio. It can be maybe a hidden portfolio, but that you can show to other funeral directors or maybe at families if they ask for it. Mm-hmm. But also to get familiar about all the moments that they're in a day of the funeral. Like for here in the Netherlands, sometimes you can go to like the oven. So how does it work? And where would you stand if you would make pictures? But also, so that's really at the end, right? So in the start, there's the car and the coffin going in and out, and how can you make pictures of that? So it has, very often it has same repetitive moments, as like a wedding would have, a first view and the ring. You know, there's moments that you that happen.
There's expected moments. There's expected moments, and then there's the unexpected that you have to be ready for.
And the good thing is, for I never have somebody saying to me like, why I miss a picture where I'm, I don't know, closing the casket or something. You know, you don't have that kind of expected moments to photograph. But yeah, I think it's good to get familiar with those moments and where you can stand to capture, like, to capture the story. So for one thing, if a coffin goes in or out of the car, I usually open a side door so I can make a picture from within the car outside, where I can see the faces of the ones carrying it. And you know, it takes a while to get to know about those moments and where to stand. Yeah. So get familiar. And also, I think I'd start with a funeral director. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I might even recommend, tell me if this is not good where you know, in the Netherlands. But if I was getting into it, I might actually contact somebody like you who's already doing it and be perfectly honest, saying, I'm getting into this niche. I'm just starting out. Haven't even built up my portfolio yet. I'm looking to start doing it. If you happen to get an inquiry and you're already booked, could you refer somebody to me to get started? Like, I'm not trying to compete with you, but, you know, if you don't have anything available, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you could try that, but that will be really hard, I think, because for me, it wouldn't work, because I would want to know that you would be able to document a day like that, because you can be such a good wedding photographer, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you can be a good farewell photographer and a life photographer, because you really need to feel that you can be somewhere. You know, you have to feel that you're allowed to be in the moment of grief, and it's very intimate. So if somebody would come to me like, hey, I just thought this is a great idea, just let me do some if you can't. No, that wouldn't work for me. No.
All right. No. So speaking of intimate, though, you describe your images, or have described your images, as intimate and sometimes fun and funny. Can you talk more about the fun and funny part of that statement?
Yes, I can. And yeah, I think it's a review of something on Fearless Photographers, but it's not from the time of my farewell or end of life photography, but it's still in a wedding. So like one example I have is, it's a wedding of, I think it's the fourth wedding of the bride, and I don't know about the groom, but anyway, long story, but we're walking on a place where there's a windmill, and the bride said, you know, I can just climb in the blades of the windmill if you want me to. I said, well, if you want to, I will make a picture if you climb into it. And then, but she had this very short skirt, maybe because of her fourth wedding, I don't know. It was a very short skirt, and so she climbed into the blades of this windmill, and then her sister, who was walking with her, told me, like, hey, photographer, just move away a little bit because you're photographing under her skirt, like her underwear. And the bride said, no, it's okay. And for me, I didn't want to capture her underwear. I wanted to crop it like from the top. Mm-hmm. And then the sister decided to make sure that I couldn't photograph her underwear. So she like, it's almost like she put in her fist in the, like, under the skirt. But for me, so that's, I thought it was a very funny moment, but it's also telling the story about I'm not really sure if she was about 50 or something, but it was still like the big sister looking out for her younger sister, you know, for this bad photographer. And also the husband, he was smiling, like everything was so funny. Yeah. So I like if there's more in a picture than just what happens. This tells really about this sister, and it's a funny moment. But also, you know, on a funeral, there's also a lot of, well, not per se funny things happening, but there's a lot of laughter and interesting moments. And so For instance, there's this coffin where a lot of kids are drawing on the sides, and then there's not much space left on the coffin itself. And then one of the kids is going, lies down on the floor to start drawing on the bottom of the coffin. Can you imagine what I'm like? So yeah, he's lying under the coffin, and that's also, that's not maybe funny, but it's sort of, because he has naked feet and it's, I don't know. I like the story and the...
That definitely has some fun to a funeral.
To a funeral, photo, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And I think it's also so interesting to see that kids, you know, they haven't learned that you might not do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't see an adult lying under a coffin to draw something.
Right. Yeah, although that would be funnier.
That would be funnier, yes.
Yeah. I shared with you previously that when my grandmother died in June, her request for her funeral was to not have anybody dressed in suits, nothing too formal. She wanted it to be fun, literally music at the graveside. And, you know, Hawaiian shirts and flowers and nothing dark and dreary, no sadness, just fun to celebrate how fun her, you know, she, how much she enjoyed her life. And so when it came time for everybody to do their speeches or say what they wanted to say, I prepared something. I pulled up my phone, started crying my eyes out before I could even start. And I had a couple funny things throughout this speech, and it was very, you know, it felt really good to like get it out, and I, you know, eventually stopped crying, but there was a lot of laughter throughout while I was talking, and so there's definitely some fun moments that happened there. But you just actually reminded me of something else that happened at the same funeral for my grandmother, because the kids, my kids and my niece and nephew, painted rocks purple, which was her favorite color. And in for Jewish funerals, a lot of times you scoop with a shovel. Each person who's there at the graveside will scoop the dirt back in.
Yeah.
You know, one by one, you take turns, and then you put the rocks on top when everything's done. And the kids took the rocks, painted purple, and threw them on the casket before the dirt was in there. So she was buried with rocks painted purple by her great grandkids. Which was really, really beautiful.
That reminds me of another story, is that there was a funeral, and next to the coffin was already lowered, and next to it was a huge pile of sand. But because it can be so confronting, this funeral location had a green, like a fake grass. Tarp. On top of it, so it wouldn't really show as a lot of heap of sand, but the kids found out that if they jumped on, then the sand would just like spill out on the bottom, and then they would grab it and throw it in the on top of the casket. Yeah, kids can have fun, and yeah, it's very interesting. They can have this moment of sadness and continue playing. That's amazing. Yeah.
Do you want to share another like memorable moment that you've captured over the years doing these?
Yeah, I have maybe two of them.
Sure.
Well, memorable, I'm not sure if you, like, I have a funny thing that I'm thinking of now, but also a very intimate moment that I think of. And
okay.
Maybe should start with the first one, the end of life memory that I have. Sure. That was, I was asked to document the end of life of a woman. She had a brain tumor, and they first thought that she was going to live another 4 months, and in the end it was 2 weeks maybe. And so they had this, I'm not sure how to call it, but like a subscription kind of thing. So they would call me whenever something would happen to see if I could capture those moments.
Okay.
And so they called me the evening that they decided on the date of the euthanasia, because her husband would be there and her two daughters and two good friends to talk about the funeral. So how the funeral would take place. So she had a really a big say in it. So that was really very intimate mm-hmm. and very beautiful to document. So, you know, talking about what kind of clothes she was like, so they were showing the dresses, like, do you want to wear this or do you want to wear that when you're in this open casket, what kind of music she wanted to play, the text that would be on the card that would be sent to the friends and family to invite for the funeral. That's not like this funny story, right? But it was very memorable for me to also very, you know, felt very honored to be in a evening like that. Was very intimate and very yeah. special. And later on, the husband told me that he got very much strength about those kind of pictures because she was very strong at that moment mm. and it helped him after she died. And beautiful. Then, and another thing that comes to mind is the funeral of a 22-year-old girl. She had a brain tumor and she decided she wanted to have a costume party for her. It was the day before she was cremated with a lot of friends and family. And so there was Snow White and a bear and a fireman and Pirates of the Caribbean. And everybody was there. So that was very special. And all her friends, they were very young, but they had so many nice or very good speeches. That was amazing. So it was a very special funeral to document. Mm-hmm. But I knew So I was booked until 4 or something, and I knew that they had to leave the patient at 4:30, and it was already 4:15, and then I think one of my cards was full, and my bag was on the other side of the room, and so I decided to just make from two cameras one camera, so I switched cards and switched lenses, and I don't know, and then a father of the girl who died proposed to her mom on stage because they said they wanted to get married with all the kids still there. And so it was, you know, not a really official wedding, but mm-hmm. sort of it was. And so the son and the daughter, and then the open casket, mm-hmm. So their daughter was there as well. And I was so happy that I still had enough battery and space on my card left. And then the dad in the end said, like, I thought it was so funny. I didn't want to tell you before. I wanted to see the surprise on your face for this moment. So yeah, that was really strange.
A wedding at a funeral.
A wedding at a funeral. Yeah. So and yeah. That's really hard to top that one, I think.
It's very hard to top that. I can't see that happening ever again. But then again, you never know. That could happen.
You never know.
Again for you. Yeah. You've got, you're photographing these very, very difficult situations, and there's a lot that is involved in it. And you are using Imagine to help your post-production. I'm wondering if you can share how has Imagine played a role in your post-production workflow for these jobs?
Well, I have a much quicker workflow, and especially for funerals, I feel it's so important to deliver the pictures as soon as possible. I do believe that it's much easier to look at those pictures when you're still in this bubble of grief and funeral than if you would wait for a month or so. So what I do is I capture the funeral one day, and then the next day I will curl the images, send them to Imagine, and then send a collection of like 12 pictures or so to a lab nearby, and then have the album ready. So it's the day after the funeral. So usually they will have a mini, it's like a preview album, you know, a mini album until they have like a big one within 2 or 3 days. And then I already have the gallery ready, but I will wait a couple of days, you know, first they need to see the album before I send the gallery. Yeah, but that wouldn't have been possible before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So outside of your photography itself, how has Imagine impacted your life?
Well, as I'm a freelance photographer, everything that influences my work influences my life. So it saves me a lot of time in my work. So I get a lot of more time in my life. And the risk is a little bit that I use that to work more. But yeah, so that's something that I still have to work on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it saves a lot.
We gave you the time back to take on more work.
Yeah.
So where can listeners learn more about you, connect with you, see your incredible photography?
On my website and on my Instagram. You want me to... So it's Jacqueline Deschamps on Instagram. And it's... I know it's going to sound really bad for non-Dutch people. It's afscheid. afscheid.jacquelinedeschamps.com, which is my end of life and funeral website. Yeah.
And can you also share a bit about your mentorship program that you have?
Yeah, sure, I can. I'm mentoring photographers one-on-one, but also through the Full Monty Workshop, which is a program that is with groups, and it has a couple of weeks, now a couple of days, and then another week that we all get together and get assignments. And I think it's one of the nicest things in what I do to mentor. Yeah. It gives me so much energy.
I totally get that. Whenever I'm mentoring a photographer, it boosts you. It boosts your
what you do.
I study or practice and train in karate in an art called Goju-Ryu, and I'm now at the level where my instructor is asking me to help teach whenever there's not enough higher ranks to teach. And he always says that he loves to teach because it makes him a better student.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Teaching really teaches you a lot about yourself. Yeah.
So my last question to you before we wrap this up, what do you love doing when not worrying about your photography business, thanks to Imagine? I know you're always worrying about your photography business, but
I do.
Those little moments when you're not thinking about it, what do you love to do?
Well, if I can stop myself working more with this free time, I do love to go to the spa. Love reading dystopian book and also pulp novels. I like sometimes when I can switch off my brain to read books that I don't have to think about where I left it or where, it's just stupid stories. And I have some lessons of the ukulele lessons and singing lessons. And singing, for me, I love to do it. I've loved it all my life, but I only do it when there's nobody at home. So I wanted to be good enough to not be ashamed of singing out loud sometimes when there is somebody in the neighborhood. So yeah, I love doing that.
Definitely. That's so awesome. That's so awesome. One day when you feel confident and comfortable enough, you'll have to...
I'll come and sing here.
You have to have an Imagine call and you can perform for everybody.
Yes. Someday, yes.
Someday. That'd be fun. Thank you so much for this awesome conversation, for inspiring everybody, for sharing your knowledge with everybody about this very different genre of photography that is not talked about nearly. And so I'm glad that we're able to talk about it today.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here. And yes, it there isn't talk about it enough. So I really hope this kind of photography will be more known. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jacqueline, for that amazing conversation. I really think that you will inspire anybody who has been considering getting into this type of photography. It is something not talked about nearly enough in the industry. So I want to thank you again for sharing your knowledge and diving deeper into this topic.
You have been listening to Workflows, presented by Imagine. To hear more from Workflows and to find a link to our guest, please go to imagine-ai.com/podcast. Be a part of the conversation by joining the Imagine community at imagine-ai.com/community. And be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for tuning in. Until next time.